Blog Talk Radio.
It's raw, it's uninhibited, and yes, it's nude. Nude Radio, the live talk show for the urban 20-something. Talk radio has never been this naked.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Nude Radio, the live talk show for the urban 20-something. For the radio arm to Nude Magazine, which is the premier online arts and progressive culture publication for you, no holds barred, truth-speaking 20-somethings. For the culture vultures, and today,
I'm back.
We have another awesome show in store for you, and we know who that is.
I'm back.
It's the week of April 19th, and this week, like every other week, we get you riled up with arts and entertainment news, our love-to-hate segment, overheard conversations, and common sense advice. And
by the way, I'm back.
We'll be opening up the phone lines to you, our lovely listeners. To join the conversation, 646-727-1706 is the number here. If you want to chime in, just make sure you press 1 on your handset, not now, but when the conversations get a little bit spicy and you want to chime in. Listen to us also on your mobile device. Type in m.blogtalkradio.com/newd into your mobile web browser, and you'll be able to stream the show live. All right, so today's guest is writer and filmmaker and a dear friend of mine, Kobina Adu. He'll be giving us a peek at his new documentary film, sweeping the country right now. It's a nude look at the Neo-African Americans. Yeah, that's all that and more. But let's give our hosts, who are obviously bursting at the seams, to introduce themselves, because one person in particular hadn't been with us last week. So,
I like one host in particular, because I was confused. I'm like, I'm back. What is he back from? I just remember he wasn't with us. Hi, Radioland. This is Melka. I'm the CEO of Nude Magazine. Your host with no disclaimer, the queen of common sense, and major, major trash talker. Glad to be with y'all.
Hello. I'm back. If you haven't heard, I am KP. Yes. I am. Did I mention that I'm back, guys? Oh yes.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm your engineer extraordinaire. I am the ultra conservative with a little funny man on the side. And this week, Milka, I represent for the manless men.
Is he really representing this week?
That's okay.
That's right. I'm Tiffany Knowles, the managing editor of Nude Magazine, the arts and progressive culture publication, where we're bearing all to expose truth. And I'm your slightly anal type A moderator, who's loved by many and tolerated by so very many more. All right, guys, we're going to spark this discussion off today with talks about President Obama's list on travel restrictions, lifting the ban on travel restrictions to Cuba.
Mm.
Now, he's only lifted travel limits for Cuban Americans visiting family in Cuba, and this is all part of the administration's push to promote freedom in the communist country of Cuba. So the big deal in Miami. And guess where I am this week, guys? I'm with Milka in Miami, beautiful Miami. But it's huge down here right now. Everyone's talking about this. So what do you guys think?
That was crazy. I don't agree with it at all. I don't think it's a good idea. It's a good idea as far as, you know, as a political, I don't know. I don't want to call it a political ploy, but, you know, it helps him out politically. I mean, I'm not trying to hate on the man. I just don't agree with the policy of lifting this ban, because I just feel like it's going to further suffocate the people that are down there being oppressed by Castro. It's a communist country. There are still going to be bread lines. Okay, when we were talking about in the editorial meeting, there's still going to be bread lines. You know, they're still not going to, a doctor is still going to make just as much as a janitor down there. It's just not fair. And I don't believe that we should be helping out a country that's communist. We shouldn't have any money going in there. I mean, what is it? Tell me, Milka, what is this going to accomplish?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I don't agree with this.
Except giving Obama more votes during the next election.
I mean, you know what? That's exactly, you know, that's what I care about. Because if you charge my Obama with that, I'm going to tell you. If that's what he's done, you know what? I'm proud of the man. I need him in 2012. I do, you know, by any means necessary. But I'm going to tell you something.
Wow.
You making me almost want to defend this story because I feel the same way. I care less about it. Not because it's communist country or whatever. It's because for me, I'm Haitian, okay? And I live in Miami, and I know U.S. policies against Haitians. And whenever there's a Cuban policy change that favors the Cubans, and it makes me incensed because I know how unfairly Haitians have been treated when it comes to our governmental policy. So, I mean, you know, that's my gripe about it, just because I feel like, you know, our group is not given the same attention as the Cubans. Now that I've said that part,
you have to
now, as far as Obama, this is a ploy for Obama, you know something? I'm not mad at him, because you know what? He had to go parade around to get Jewish votes at the end of the political race. So you know something? Get started early. He got to do what he got to do. Nobody complained when he was going around. He had to come to Florida. You know how many, you know, old white Jewish groups he met with? I couldn't understand it. I didn't see him coming to meet the Black caucus in Florida, but.
Well, he may get.
Go ahead, sorry.
Okay, he may get some Cuban-American votes, but apparently the party line, as far as the Cuban-American community in Miami, is that they want no ties to Cuba. Staunch Republicans in Miami, like Lincoln Diaz-Balart from Florida, the U.S. representatives here.
Mario Diaz-Balart.
Exactly. They say no. They basically, the statement that they've issued to President Obama is that this is a serious mistake, and you cannot increase Cuban-American travel and remittance dollars because that is, as Kara said, just strengthening this Cuban dictatorship and communist country. So they don't want any ties. So they don't think of it as a good at all, but some Cuban-Americans who might
the younger crowd.
The younger crowd, and maybe some who have family back there because the older Cubans that came earlier, they don't, and they're all here. So they're like, we don't care about Cuba. Some people have family there, so they're thinking, this is great. I get
exactly.
to see them. You know? So he might get some votes. He might not.
If you're Cuban, call in and chime in because we really want to hear what you have to say. I doubt you guys are because, I don't know, but whatever. I don't think you're going to chime in and talk about Cuba, but I hope you do. This is a challenge to you. Call in, and I want you to press 1, and you know, I want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, most definitely.
On a lighter note.
Let's get into love to hate, most definitely.
I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna stay out of it if I get myself in trouble.
Uh-oh.
Okay,
yeah,
go ahead, on a lighter note.
On a lighter note, for my love to hate this week, why did President Obama name his new dog Bo?
That is a light note.
You don't name a dog.
Do nothing right. He can't do anything right.
No, you just don't name a dog Bo. Because if you name a dog Bo, of course everyone knows that the dog gets confused with the word no when you're trying to train him, okay?
You're an idiot,
I'm sorry. I wanted to keep it real nice and light, and that was dumb. Okay? He finally made a mistake that I can say, you know, this is crazy. Cause you just don't name your dog Bo. You don't name him Show. You don't name him, you know, Lo. You just don't name a dog Bo.
You don't name him Bo.
Okay, what are they gonna say when he starts chewing up the Lincoln bedroom and they're like, no? And he's like, yeah, what's up? I'm right here. What's up? What's good? You know?
You're
gonna think you're calling his name. That's it.
Both
the reporters were thinking of you because they did say that he's been thoroughly house trained and such.
Oh wow. No. He's been thoroughly house trained wherever the heck he was. He was not thoroughly house trained in the White House, okay? He just arrived at the White House, what, last week?
He's going to want to explore, you know.
He looks like he's really cute, too, but he's big for a dog. I mean, I didn't know Portuguese water dogs were that big, You know, he's big, but you just don't name a dog Bo. What did he get that name from?
Okay. Bo. Personally, want to say, on a deeper side of the story, it is a gift from Ted Kennedy. Now, we all know that his push towards the Obama campaign was definitely needed. I just wonder, like, you know, how many favors does he owe the Kennedys? I just, like, you know, you know, I just think it's taking the worst part of it, you know, but, you know, just a side note.
Noka, that's awesome. I love carrots, love to hate. That was so
they can't even handle the dog. They can't even handle Michelle, they showed a picture of her trying to hold the dog. She was getting dragged by Bo. Bo was just dragging her around. Now, if she wanted to stop him, she could say no. And but the dog, of course, is just saying no. So
okay, I'm here.
Okay, I'm good. I'm good on the Bo story. Okay, I'm good.
No, so what's your love to hate?
My love to hate is car dealership. Now, during our editorial meeting, okay. Kev came at me pretty strong with this, okay? So I had to think, because I was kind of like, you know, mind you, my background is business and accounting and such. So I do understand our capitalist nature in this country.
Well, obviously you don't.
I do, but this is a problem. I'm going to tell you what the problem is, because on a business sense, really, that makes more business sense than the
problem. Please tell us what the heck this love to hate is.
Exactly, like, you know, everybody's lost.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, talk to Karen. All right. My love to hate is car dealerships. A few months ago, Hyundai, I heard a commercial on the radio from Hyundai, and they had a new plan where if you buy their car and you lose your job subsequently after, you can either return it or they'll pay for, like, the first 5 months or something like that until you get your new job. And I thought, look at Hyundai. Their sales not doing right at all. They're trying to get those cars out. That's what I thought. Until a couple of days ago, I heard Ford's commercial, and Ford, mind you, the perk is a little bit sweeter because they're paying 9 months, or up to $500 a month or whatever. But I was thinking, like, seriously, you could have done that all along. And I'm thinking about all of my broke friends that got their car repoed, like, from losing their jobs. And I'm thinking, and their credit is all messed up now. And I'm thinking, honestly, from they could have done it so long ago. Why not? They just screwed up so many people for losing their jobs. And
whoa. Hold on, time out. Because I'm letting you go on and on and on without it. What do you mean they let so many people screw? Milka, again, like I said in our editorial meeting, okay, they are in the business to make money. This is America, okay?
We do not help people.
No, because, I mean, you didn't get this. You want them to bail people out all, you know, last year, the year before that, you know, 10 years ago when all your friends were losing. Now... Okay, I can see their point of bailing them. I can see them I can see them doing this now because business is bad, and they need to make money. The whole objective is to make money, not to help us. They are not here to help us. They're here to give us something that we think we want, so we give them the money for their good. That's it. That's basically
and that's why they're all going bankrupt, and that's why we buy import cars. Because you know something? You got to rub the customer's back. And lesson 101, you take care of your customer.
Lesson 101, you don't get a car unless you can afford it, unless you can afford to lose your job and not be able to pay for it for at least a year. You know, I mean,
That's convenient. Dude, listen, 20-something, I remember buying my first car on credit cards, okay? And I lost my job subsequently after. My mom had to make pay the first 2 months.
My first car was a 1992 Honda Accord that I saved up money for. Put money away in a CD and borrowed against my own money so that I paid for my own car, my first car. It was a used car. It was a nice little stick shift. Didn't have no AC. The windows didn't work. You know, You know, I'm driving
neither
around
did
girlfriend.
Mine.
You
neither
know,
did
I,
mine.
I'm driving
Look,
around
big
girlfriend.
Magnet.
You know, it's hot. You know,
the
Friday,
big magnet.
You know, you know what I mean? I mean, come on. That was my first car, but guess
don't
what?
Have
no,
that
first,
luxury.
And guess what? I was making only $7 an hour, and yet that car was paid off. I didn't get it until I could afford it. That's just the point. Okay, you want them to bail people out? I just don't get it. They're in the business to make money, and this does not make them money.
Please, somebody send a few emails to Karen. Because we're not just talking about new cars, because I know people that love that car, not from buying luxury item cars, but buying the car because they need it. In Miami, unlike New York, I'm sorry, my first job when I got back home, I drove an hour because I couldn't find a job near home. So please tell me how I couldn't even take a bus to work. So please
that's
tell me.
That's a very good cultural observation. That's a nuance. You know, it's a difference in culture because we have a pedestrian culture in New York, and then in Miami it's a huge car culture. So things are spread out, and that's a very good observation, very clear.
And I mean, I miss New York at that point because I didn't want the last thing I wanted was a car note.
Well, you can have my car now because this is my driveway because I take the subway to Manhattan every day, and I mean it's just wasted away. It's just sitting there. I have a car payment for nothing. So you can have it if you want.
Thank you guys for that lively discussion on Milka's love to hate topic. Now for mine, which will be really quick.
I love you.
My love to hate is teachers wilding out. Okay, apparently Milka, your budget cuts on education story was a good one a few weeks ago because these budget cuts apparently have gotten to these teachers. I mean, these teachers in recent
I'm
months.
I'm mad you're relating budget cuts to that. Crazy
teachers, loco, en la cabeza. Okay, basically, in the news, we've been hearing about indiscussion, stabbing, slandering, kidnapping, and all at the hands of teachers. Okay, so apparently a 48-year-old Arizona teacher was caught in bed with an 18-year-old high school student. But guess who caught them in the act? Her 20-year-old boyfriend. So the boyfriend proceeded to stab the high schooler with a kitchen knife right there, jab.
That's what's up.
Obviously, this teacher, the 48-year-old woman, has a propensity for younger men because she can teach them things, you know? So it's good. Because she likes to teach, you know, this is her passion. So, and now,
I can't believe you're taking it that far.
Oh, wow.
Exactly. Now she's left with no lover and a boyfriend who's in jail for second-degree murder. And
he killed the guy? He died from a butter knife?
He did. I don't know if it was with a butter knife or a steak knife, one of the two, you know, but he did.
Talk about a way to go, a butter knife.
You know, and it's her indiscretion that brought all this on, you know, and I feel bad. And now then there's this 28-year-old Sunday school teacher who allegedly killed and stashed an 8-year-old girl in a pond, just stashed her there. And apparently the autopsy said that she was killed. It seems that she was killed just minutes after leaving the Sunday school teacher's home. And that's pretty heinous. You know, she's not a public school teacher, but Sunday school teacher at that. You know, she should be teaching about Noah and the Ark. Who built the Ark? Noah. You know, this is
she's in a position of authority over these children. And, well, you know, the thing is, I also read that, you know, they also, the autopsy showed that the girl was raped.
Oh, God.
The 8-year-old girl. And at that point, I wanted to throw up. Because I just can't even imagine it. So
it's definitely not right.
So
that's it for our love to hate. Now you can come back and join us if you loved our discussion. You can call us 646-727-1706. But we'll be back in just a second when we will reveal all about our entertainment picks for the week. You'll find out which Neo Soul star is solving mysteries for the nation of Botswana. Not more. The radio.
They said that nothing good would ever come, could ever come from this place misunderstood. I wish they could. I wish they could see us now. Can they hear us?
that no one would receive us when we would come.
Who We Are by Double Edge. This is Nude Radio. We give new and upcoming bands and artists a chance to get spotlighted on the show. If you want to submit your song to be played on air, send it on down to radio@nudemagazine.com or visit the new nudemagazine.com website and leave us your MySpace and information on our forum. So we'd love to hear a lot more about you and maybe get you on the show. So we're about to get into our entertainment picks for the week, but we'd like to reintroduce our rating system, which is in honor of the two cities where our magazine is based and where your co-hosts hail from and live. We will use the rating system of New York's and Miami's, where we give everything 4 points. If we rate something using New York's, it means that it's conservative and artistically avant-garde. If we rate something using Miami's, it has high entertainment value and is warm to the senses. If we rate something both with New York's and Miami's, this means it has a mix of both elements. All right, so we're going to jump right into it. Milka, take it away.
I go first. New to DVD this week, The Spirit, starring Gabriel Match. Also a lot of names. Big names, Eva Mendes, Scarlett Johansson, and of course, my super favorite, Samuel L. Jackson. I give it a rating of 1/10 of a Miami star.
Oh, wow.
Of a Miami sun.
For real, like, I wanted to give it no rating, but I figured I have to put something up. So, being a math teacher, I'm going to put it into fractions for you. 1/10. Okay, 1/10.
Oh, my goodness.
Let me preface by saying I couldn't even finish it. Yeah. All right? It was nonsense. Samuel L., of course, always being Samuel L., he really tried. He tried. It reminded me of the movie he did with Bruce Willis when he was in the wheelchair. He was equally terrible at that as well. I mean, it was just horrible. Unbreakable. Oh, gosh. And then couple his bad acting with Eva and Scarlett that were just confused. I don't even think they knew what movie they were in. It's crazy. And then the hero of the movie, Gabriel Match. I'm like, who is this dude? So I had to IMDb him. He's been in a few films here and there. Like, that movie was total garbage. They were trying to ride the whole Sin City success, and they failed. They failed horribly. So save your money. Do not go to Blockbuster. Do not order it on Do not. You don't need to even order it online. Just wait till it comes on TBS, okay?
Oh, wow.
You won't be disappointed.
But on TBS? Ooh.
TBS. Well,
we should thank or TNT or something.
We should thank
you know what?
I think Spike.
Spike TV might pick that up. It's more Spike TV. Mm-hmm. That kind of garbage goes straight to Spike TV.
Ooh, Spike TV. I love it. I definitely do. So I'm going to do my entertainment pick for the week. It is, drum roll please, HBO's new series, Number One Ladies Detective Agency, starring Jill Scott, the Grammy Award winning neo-soul singer and songwriter. So, Jill plays head detective Precious Ramotswe, and she is actually not new to the silver screen. She's played in different films like Hound Dog and Why Did I Get Married, Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married. And
yeah.
You guys might have your opinion on, basically, on the films that she's done. But
yeah.
I have to say, she's not doing a terrible job as this detective. Basically, it is shot in the precious African nation of Botswana, which is awesome because I first of all, I always get a kick out of reading subtitles on network and cable television. It gives me, like, chills. I just love it because I love foreign films. I love reading subtitles.
Oh,
so,
wow. You're weird.
I love
weird.
But
this is shared passion, but you're taking it too far to me.
You know?
I know. It's exciting for me. But it's not heavily subtitled, though. It's not heavily subtitled. So you guys who aren't into subtitles would definitely get into it. They speak with accents. Anika Noni Rose and Idris Elba actually was featured in one of the last episodes. So you can definitely check it out on HBO On Demand. But one of the big things about this is that I thought, okay, shot in Botswana, probably just the landscaping and everything, that's why they decided to shoot there. It's a beautiful country. I've been there. But no, they make lots of cultural references. It's steeped in Botswana culture. They talk about the ivory tusk smuggling, and she solved a case about that. The nation's tension between voodoo and traditional Christianity. They talk about how a cup of tea can cure your heart, your ailing heart, and even address the problems of orphans to HIV/AIDS, because that's a huge epidemic there. And they feature this really cute boy who goes to the detective agency and wants a job, and Mara Motswe gives him a job to pass out leaflets in the community. Very cute show. I love it. I think that they're doing a very good job at not being trite and banal and not just showing, oh, this is another show about detectives or another show about Africa. They're actually really blending the two very well. I do want them to work on making the crimes a little harder to solve, because you can unravel them really easily. As a viewer, you're like, oh, yeah, he did it. It's not fun. You want to have a little bit more mystery, but just got through pretty well.
Mm-hmm. What's your rating for it?
My rating is 2 New York and 1.5 Miami.
Wow. I have to say, from your review, I don't know. I was thinking that sounds like a 1 Miami. That just does not sound good at all.
Actually,
the idea of watching Jill Scott in Africa solving crimes, like, for real?
I mean, it's
my
cool.
Father-in-law gave it he gave it a good review, and he's
really?
British. He's like the worst critic ever. Like, everything sucks to him, and for him to actually say it was good, I was like, okay, you know, maybe.
Exactly. I'm with your father-in-law. I'm a pretty tough critic, so I watched it, and I watched it with an open mind, thinking it was going to be pretty cheesy, but not as cheesy as I thought. So,
I mean, despite her performance in Why I Got Married.
Oh,
I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
She played that bad girl was horrible.
Hey! I actually love that movie. I don't care about her performance, but wow, I love that movie. She was just getting ragged on in that movie. I don't want to go into it, but she was just getting ragged on in that movie, which is why.
Because she was horrible. And I'm sorry, not every big girl is just eating and just letting people walk all over. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
They didn't say that. They just. Okay, we're critiquing it. We're going into.
We're going to intention.
But Jill Scott, I mean, she redeems herself, I think, here. Her accent, she was worked with a coach, an accent and a linguist. She's worked with someone because she's doing it. She's doing
well, that's the one thing I will say she needs to work on a little bit more, because that accent is...
Her Botswana accent?
Yeah.
What happened to her singing?
Not
how about that?
No, her accent's not bad. Like, she's... She's doing a pretty good job. She's gonna get better.
I want her to sing again. I just remember the
she's
first
singing.
Album. That's all I want.
She's singing in the show, I think, a little bit.
I'm talking about, like, focusing on her art and dropping. I mean, any music lover who remember Jill Scott's first album, you know, okay. Let's Walk in the Park. And Jill Scott, I need you back. Like, make a real CD. Like, quit playing around on TV. I mean, he was an excellent singer.
I smell some hate. Oh my goodness, are you kidding me? Wow, she's trying to move on, you know, she's trying to be, you know, that triple threat, I guess.
Well, that's the thing. She was an apprentice at the Arden Theater, so she's got a theater background. So she wants to, as you said, do the triple down.
Milka had no comeback for my hate comment. What is going on? Is she feeling okay with it?
I'm not even gonna bite. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes people just wanna give you something to tear them up about. I'm not even going to bite on that one. I'm just going to let it slide.
Okay.
Really quick, that's why I want you guys to go to newmagazine.com because we're running a full story on Number One Lady Detective Agency this week, and we're actually running a really cool story about crossover artists who are actors, dancers, singers, and, you know, all of that. So check that out, newmagazine.com. But Kara, go ahead.
newdmagazine.com, not N-E.
Yes, we know. Karen, what's your entertainment pick of the week?
Okay, my entertainment pick of the week is none other than one of my favorite bands of all time, Jars of Clay. They are back again with another album release that's coming out this coming Tuesday called Long Fall Back to Earth. I had a chance to listen to the album, and I must say they've done it again. I can't believe... I don't understand how a group that's been out for 15 years can still look so young and still appeal to people, you know, all kind of age group, you know, appeal to younger age groups. But they've done it again. I mean, I believe they have at least 4 hits coming out this hand. They've reinvented themselves again is what I'm trying to say. You know, they've gotten this new style. I don't know how to really explain it because I haven't, you know, listened to the entire album. But I've fallen in love with a few songs. Mainly, there's this one, the last track on there called Heart. It's called Heart. I think it's the best track on the whole song. I normally pick out one song from Jars of Clay that I just, you know, becomes one of my all-time favorites, like Show You Love from Who We Are Instead album or Five Candles. Tiffany, do you know that one from their Much Afraid?
Oh, yeah. Love it.
I mean, she don't even know what I'm talking about. that one. And then one of my all-time favorites, the Valley song. I love that one. Go Steve James, who used to play that on WMCU all the time. But anyway, go out and get this one. I think you will absolutely love it. They've reinvented themselves again. It's called Long Fall Back to Earth. Please, I give it four Miamis. So.
Ooh.
That's
cool. Nice. All right. Yeah. I'm feeling it. Because, you know, Jars is my band. So I'm okay if you're giving it.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, the album's a lot of fun. So you should.
Stephanie, can I say something real quickly? Because when giving the Jar of Clay review, that's how I feel about Jill Scott. I feel like, you know, there are musicians that are so gifted. When you get to see their evolution and the legacy they leave behind is wonderful, and I her start gave me that feeling, and I thought she was going to be one of those artists with a body of work, not just another person trying to make it in Hollywood, but, I mean, her album had things to say, so I figured this woman was an artist, and so
It probably just wasn't paying the bills.
But that's what they say, you know, acting is a more lucrative career. You can do half of the work and get paid twice as much, you know?
Exactly. The grind in music is so much more, you know, it's so much harder, you know?
Concert,
but you
touring.
Have, like, Common, you know, you have dudes like Common that came out with Wanted and stuff like that, and he's still putting out some real good albums, you know, like Water for Chocolate. these people, yes, they're doing their acting, but they're still, you can't forget Common. I don't care how many movies he's played in. Whenever his albums drop, I mean, gotta hear it. So I just want her to remember, I miss her. Come back, Jill.
I feel you. All right, so that'll do it for our Entertainment Picks for the week. When we come back, we will be featuring an amazing interview with Kobina Adu. Am I African-American, Afro-Caribbean, West Indian-American? I don't know. I'm so confused. I'll find out in just a minute on Nude Radio. Stay tuned, guys. We want you back. We want you back. 646-727-1706.
My name is Melinda Williams, and you're listening to Nude Radio. Welcome back. You are just listening to Hosanna by Exodus. I absolutely love this song. I remember Tiffany bringing it back from her South African trip. Still love it. Still love it.
It's a good group.
Okay. I love it. This afternoon, we have in store for you a very, very, I think, a very good topic of discussion. And, one second. Have we found Kalina?
Yes, he's on.
He's on? Okay, great. Thank you guys for being here with us. Today, we'll be chatting with filmmaker Kobina Adu and his new documentary, The Neo-African American. And before we start our conversation with Kobe, I wanted to ask my co-host how they identify themselves, because ironically enough, that is how Kobe's documentary started. A lot of the people that he interviewed, he asked them first to identify themselves. And I was interested to find out how my hosts identify themselves. How do you identify yourself, Karen?
Oh, why did I go first?
Are you African-American?
I identify myself as black.
Okay.
As black?
Yeah.
Well, where are your parents from? Because I know that...
if you're going to say... Are you saying how I fill out my application at work? Or, I mean, what do you mean?
Do you feel like you're an African-American?
No. I feel like I'm a Jamaican.
And you feel like you're a Jamaican?
Yeah, I'm a Jamaican. I'm not an African-American.
Were you born in Jamaica?
Yes, I was.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, man, yeah.
I just became a citizen last year. What are you talking about? I just became a citizen in October.
Congrats. Mine was August. Tiffany, how do you identify yourself?
I identified myself as a West Indian-American.
And you were born where?
I was born in beautiful Miami, Florida.
See, all these different descriptors. Well, our acclaimed filmmaker here puts it all in perspective for us. And nobody can talk better about the subject than all three of us, than Colby himself. Welcome, Colby.
Thank you very much, Milka. Thank you for having me.
No Hi, problem. Guys.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Hi.
Okay, Colby, well, let's start off by telling our listeners a little bit about the documentary and exactly what was your point of inspiration for creating this documentary.
Okay, well, the documentary is essentially about how rapid voluntary immigration from Africa and the Caribbean is transforming the African-American narrative. And keywords, rapid and voluntary, are very important. Important in that, of course, people of African and Caribbean descent have been coming to the U.S. For ages. And voluntary, because it is, of course, that makes it uniquely different from the traditional African-American narrative of slavery, Jim Crow, civil rights, etc. And rapid in that as much as it's been going on for a while, Caribbean immigration started centuries ago, and African immigration originally started in the late 1800s. Rapid in that the last decade, the immigration, especially from Africa, has been quite phenomenal. It's I think it's estimated almost half of all Africans came since 2000. So
wow.
That is the intellectual motivation for me, but it's also a personal motivation in that. Let me give you an anecdote.
Okay.
Before I came to the States, my goal was to be a filmmaker, and so before I left Ghana, people would ask me why I was coming to the U.S., and I would tell them I wanted to be a filmmaker, and they would wish me luck to become the next Steven Spielberg. And when I came to the U.S., people would ask me the same question.
So when you were at home, ask you if you wanted to be Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, when I told them I was coming to the U.S. to be a filmmaker, they would wish me luck to become the next Steven Spielberg.
Got
and
you.
And when I came to the States, people would ask me why I came to the U.S., and I would tell them I wanted to be a filmmaker, and they would wish me luck to become the next Spike Lee or John Singleton.
Oh.
And I found that very interesting because it was only after a while that I started putting all the pieces together. And for me, that was quite interesting, given that actually I come from a country that is over 90% black, and I never thought about myself in those racial categories. Never thought of myself, I mean, I knew I was black, but it was never an issue in my mind. And this and other episodes, for instance, when I would go to the cafeteria for the first time with my roommates, Mexican and German, and realize that the black students were sitting together, that was shocking for me. I thought, man, I thought this stuff ended in the 60s. So all those different narratives of coming to see America and being understanding what it means to be black in America and the sort of different social dynamics was a personal interest to me. And then as time went on, I had a conversation with people and realized it's a conversation they have with themselves too and among themselves. And so the documentary is sort of a way for me to use it as a focal point for this very important conversation.
I watched the documentary, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But immediately what I thought is that it was really academic, and not that it's a negative criticism, because I enjoyed it, and you had some really brilliant professors there. I felt like I wanted to take a class with them. And I guess I wanted to know, how do you think, who is going to see this documentary, and what do you hope its impact will, what kind of impact do you hope it will make?
Well, who I think is going to see the documentary, initially, this is the way I think about it. In the fall, after I first made the documentary, I did a lot of outreach to mostly universities and institutions, and my targets are mostly communities that I thought would be interested, whether it's African immigrants, Caribbean immigrants, African Americans, etc., sort of as a focal point for this conversation that is sometimes difficult in these groups. And my original goal was just to do screenings, not to sell DVDs, just have 1 hour of the documentary, 1 hour of discussion around it. So that was my original goal. And in the spring, I started getting a lot of inreach, if you will, in that. So that sort of made me realize the sort of people who were interested. And I realized, as much as it's a documentary about Caribbean and African immigration, it's also a documentary about identity. So it has much more appeal than that, because it's something that is very interesting, especially in these times.
Right.
So the main groups I've been showing that, and going back to your point about it being very academic, it has been universities. But incidentally, about 2 years ago, 2 weeks ago, I had a screening in Atlanta. It was a church youth group that organized it, and it was one of the best discussions I've had since. And
really?
Again, that means that, yes. And they were very young, some in the mid to late teens. And we had very, very interesting and invigorating discussions. So, again, that has shown me another path that I thought it may be a bit too academic for people who are 14, who are not university, college age. So,
right.
As I show it, I realized that there's more interest than my original vision for using this as a focal point for conversation in colleges and universities. I've shown it at the Library of Congress, the Schomburg Center in New York, and other places where people from the community have just come in. So it's one thing I've learned is that it's a timely conversation, and it's an important one.
Well, I'm glad. It kind of made me really excited to hear you say that, because I loved it, and I hope that, I mean, congratulations, by the way, on if you go to his website, he's going to be doing a lot of screening, and I'm so excited for you. But I got super excited when you said you did the screening with the younger audience, and that they got it, and that is a conversation that is worth having. Now, to get into the meat of your documentary, what was interesting to me, when you started, you listed a number of names that are used, or blacks use in this country to describe themselves, just to share with the listeners a few of them that you showed in documentary. You have African, non-American, African and American, true, in quotation, African-American, and then you have your African-American. I mean, I was dying, but the truth of it is I can completely relate, because I'm not your traditional African-American, as in my parents were not born and raised in this country, and we immigrated from Haiti, and although I am American, when I'm asked if I'm African American, I often correct them if I'm Haitian American. So to see the list, I'm just thinking this can go on and on and on and on. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah. So just to ask, I wanted to ask you some of the questions that you asked your interviewees. And so, how is it that you identify yourself?
Okay. Well, starting from the top, it's interesting because. The first question that actually I'll start from the end. The first question that I asked people was, I just put the camera there and I told people that I wasn't going to tell them which questions I was going to ask them. But then after the interview, if they were uncomfortable with anything, I will shoot again and I'll re-edit. So I just went to people, and the first question I asked everybody was, are you African American? And
yeah.
I don't want to give away the documentary, but then the answers will surprise you. And actually, initially, my working title was The New African Americans. And
a lot of them were taken back when you asked them that question, which was surprising to me.
They
were.
Like, pause.
They didn't expect it. They were shocked.
Exactly.
They didn't see it coming.
They were
exactly.
Paused. They didn't know what to say.
Exactly. And the thing is, so when actually, like the working title was The New African Americans. And so when I realized how much people, how nuanced it is, then I changed the title to The New African Americans, because I thought it would be inaccurate to say The New African Americans when clearly many people in these groups don't identify themselves as African American. And to your point about you always saying, yeah, I'm sort of African American with a twist, I think that's what makes it all interesting. And it's something that some people may see as, oh, am I being divisive? But not necessarily. I think it does show the diversity in the black community, and it's something that we should embrace and celebrate. And I personally identify myself as Ghanaian because it's very simple for me, since I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm not even going to talk about my immigration status on radio, but...
you don't have to worry about finding your title yet.
But I'm a U.S. citizen, so it's very simple for me. I'm just Ghanaian. So
yeah.
For me, it's quite easy. But then I really appreciate how difficult, I mean, well, I don't know if difficult is a word, but how people would have to take a pause in answering that question because
yeah.
It is sort of... I boxed them in a way, and that's as a filmmaker,
I
want
to drop.
I love
it. It was a great way to start it. Kobe, we have to take a quick break, but just to let the listeners in, one of the things that I loved about the documentary is that it showed all the perspectives, but it wasn't selling any. And when I asked you about that, you were talking about how your documentary is an evolving documentary. And
mm-hmm.
I've never heard of that, and I think that it's brilliant. So when we come back, we'll talk about that and so much more. And for those of
you
who are listening to us, you are welcome to call us at 646-727-1706. All join us on the conversation.
I meet a lot of people, see many faces. Every week there's an adventure in diverse places. I make my living out of music and rhymes. If you're not careful, it can leave you worn out at times. Hear the music biz, full of snakes and sharks. Attracts a lot of thrill seekers like amusement parks. Whether secular or Christian, the risk is on you. Don't sleep, the gospel side has its problems too. But I'm still here, kept the same pace. You can move mountains even if you got a little faith. See, God empowers us to face any challenge. Watch the Lord push aside the devil till he lose balance. But you gotta want it, you realize it needed. Suffering for so long, now expect to be defeated. Till the only thing left is regret. But realize that you got options, not over yet. Come on. But don't fear when the troubles arise. But look up to the sky, tell the Father our high. We're saying,
we're gonna make it.
I look forward to the happy days. I thank God for his mercy. He made a way to cry.
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
First two.
I walk a tightrope. Yo, I'm not a pro. Got my hand in the Lord's and my eyes are closed. Started on the left and I'm inching it right. This is how many of us live by faith, not sight. The wind shakes me up. I feel a little fear. But I can't let go cause I'm almost there. The Lord accepted me as a sinner, and at the end of the rope, I see nothing but winners. I see nothing but you with no problems, and the blessings of God is at the altar when you're ready to solve them, because nothing in the world can stop them.
Hi, guys. Welcome back. We're going to make it by Paradox. And once again, let me give you the number to call in. It's 646-727-1706. And please, if you would like to join us, press 1. And so we know that you want to chat with us. So where we left off, Selena, Fluid documentary and how that it has evolved from, from its start. Like, how did you get the idea to make it so fluid? Or where did you get your, I've never heard of it.
I call it a living documentary. Documentary, sort of playing on the word living document in a way, which I didn't even think about at the time. But the point is that I think, like I said, I think of it more than just a documentary. It's a conversation. And so as a conversation, as you mentioned, as much as possible, I try to be as balanced and analytical as in editing and trying to incorporate all the different opinions on the different sub-issues. However, there are many more opinions out there than just the academic opinions. So what
right.
I do is, wherever I have a screening, I take all the suggestions and into consideration to make a better documentary. So I keep adding elements to it that I hadn't thought about before. One element that has been brought up a couple of times, and rightfully so, is having more Afro-Latino perspective, having more of the Islamic factor, especially for immigration from Africa, among Somalis, etc. And so I try to add all these. And what I've started in the last few screenings at Brown and Columbia and Illinois Wesleyan University is I actually filmed the audience discussions. So That's great. I think about all
yeah, you're really open to having them shape the future of this documentary, which is really wonderful. Now, my host is telling me that there's a caller online, and caller, just
sure.
1 minute. Be patient with me. I'll give Kobe to you in a minute. But I wanted to talk about one of the persons you interviewed in the documentary, Dr. Yvette Alex Anson, professor of poli sci in Indiana University.
Yes.
She, of course, is brilliant throughout the whole documentary, but there was one point in particular she addressed that I wanted you to answer from your own perspective. And it is the question of, you know, the immigrant African as opposed to the true African American. And how she put it in this way, and I think she put it best, she said that if you had to boil it down, that African Americans are interested in transforming American society, whereas African immigrants are here to benefit from the resources. And I thought that was really well put. And I was wondering if you would elaborate on that, because you had mentioned, you had given me the analogy of the window and the wall, and
mm-hmm.
I would love for you to share that with
the
participants.
Okay. Well, that's right. She's a professor, and I'm a visual communicator, so I take those opinions of words and put it in visuals. And the visual that I draw, which is what I use for my closing thoughts for my screenings, is that to really understand the relationship between black immigrants, if you will, and African Americans, you have to think of a wall to the American dream, in that historically all black people in America have faced a wall to the American dream just by virtue of their skin color. And over the centuries, many African Americans, through their blood and sweat, have broken windows in that wall. And the windows are big enough to jump through. But then if you confront a wall and you're trying to break windows in it, your instinct is to break the whole wall down and then walk through.
Right.
And that, in a sense, is the African-American project that Professor Alex Asensio talks about, which is a project of transformation. Now, when you have black immigrants, many of them are coming from a place so economically dark and politically dark. But when it comes to the U.S. and they confront this thing, they don't see a wall, they see windows. And their instinct is just to jump through. And in fact, it's those windows that brings them here, the windows to the American dream. And so for them, the black immigrant narrative is really all the black immigrant project is a project of exploitation. So you have one project of transformation and one of exploitation. And it is that dialectic which creates which shapes the relationship between African Americans and Africans.
Isn't that awesome to think? Like, I've never heard it put so succinctly.
Love the analogy. Love
I
the analogy,
it.
Kobe.
Really. And you are welcome to take the caller, Casey.
Sorry? Okay, sure.
Casey, you're welcome to take the caller.
Okay. All right, caller, we have, let's see, caller 3130. What is your question?
First of all, I'd like to ask, do you notice a sense of superiority with the immigrant as opposed to the African American, that the immigrant seems to have this sense of superiority that he can accomplish so much more, whereas the African American does not have the motivation to accomplish the same thing he does. Did you notice that during your documentary? That's my first question, but then.
Okay, sure. Please go ahead.
Yeah,
would you like me to take that first? And you
yeah, take that first. No, take that
okay.
first.
All right. Well, I think I have sensed that in my personal anecdotal life as much as well as that issue came up in the documentary. Not necessarily that somebody was taking that position, but I think Professor, a couple of people, African Americans as well as black immigrants, spoke of that issue. And I think it goes back to, I think there's a bit of it, which is there's this mutual embarrassment, if you will, in the relationship between African Americans and Africans generally, in that many African Americans see Africa through what they see on TV and are embarrassed by that. Many Africans come here and then they see African Americans through what they see on TV and they are embarrassed by that. There's a bit of that there. But then in the big picture, I think it goes back to the analogy in that it's just they're very different projects. If you take the typical black immigrants, they come from a country where every doctor they know, every pilot they know, every architect they know, every head of state they know looks like them. So when they come here, their sense of what they can do or what the system is, it's never a doubt in their mind. It's not a question. They have never been exposed to an achievement gap. They don't even think about that. So that sort of confidence about the system, if you will, can sometimes be misconstrued as a superiority complex. That's not to say there may be some individuals who may feel that way, but I think generally, like I said, it's that difference in perspective that sometimes creates that engagement, which is usually based on different perspectives of life and of opportunity. Because speaking personally, from where I'm from, coming here, I mean, I know there are obstacles and I've been a victim of them, but I see more opportunity than obstacles. And for me, if somebody is complaining about the walls, I like to point out the windows to them. And that's what may be happening in the grassroots as well.
Okay, so the second question is this. The immigrants, because he's coming from a depressed situation, mm-hmm. he is more apt to see the windows rather than someone who's been here for years and years and been knocked down and abused and rejected. See, so he's so highly motivated. Even though the walls are there, he's not inclined to see it because just by the nature of coming from such a far country, such a depressed country, like the Bahamas or Haiti or Africa and so on and so forth, they've made up their minds that, hey, I made all this effort, so I'm going to make this work come hell or high water. Do you agree with that assessment, yes or no?
I think I agree with that assessment in terms of how many immigrants to the U.S. And again, going back to what Milka asked me in the beginning, in terms of the audiences that I want to see this documentary, like I said, it's much more than an African-American, African-Caribbean story. It's a story about identity, a story about immigration. And you can make that case for all immigrants. And it's not just and to be honest with you, it's easy to compare certain metrics of achievement between black immigrants and African-Americans. But if you do that between immigrant white and native white people, I'm sure you'll find the same thing, in that
right.
Immigrants, by virtue of coming from overcoming very, very adverse conditions and coming here, that's all they see. They're here for one thing. They're here to make a dollar, and that's all they'll find opportunities to make that dollar. They don't see it as their responsibility to transform the society. And again, going back to the African-American perspective, I mean, it's easy for many immigrants to say, oh, all they see is walls. But the thing is, it's not just a matter of all they see is walls. Even those who see windows, sometimes they feel it's their responsibility to break the rest of the walls for everybody else.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Actually, when I was at the University of Chicago, a young man made a very interesting point. He said he realized that many African-Americans appear to tend to gravitate towards certain majors like sociology and political science and African-American studies, etc., whereas many immigrants just want to go to do medicine, economics, anything else, engineering.
Hard science.
It's something that I've also noticed. And so, again, it's about even those who see the windows enough to be in college or in the grad school, they feel it as their responsibility to break the rest of the wall for everybody else.
Yeah.
Okay, my final question.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, my final question is this. And since I work in the homeless ministry, I work in the prison ministry, and I notice this, is that after the immigrant comes here, by the second or third generation, they've mm-hmm. fallen into the same bad habits as the native African Americans, and they don't have the same goal and ambition. Have you discovered that so far?
I mean, there is some research out there that says that second, third generation African Americans see themselves Mars, second, third generation black immigrants see themselves more as African Americans. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as saying bad habits, if you will. I mean, I don't want to put any value judgment on any of them. But the point is that, yes, I mean, and it makes sense, right? It makes common sense that if you are second, third generation, where you grow up with the same narratives in your mind, you go to school, it's the same, you hear the same things, you hear the same achievement gaps, you hear everything else, you will feel as part of the cause. And of course, the extent to which that person feels that, whether African American or Haitian or whatever it is, would depend on the family where they are and the, what is being taught to them at home. And it's interesting. One other perspective, it also depends on where you are born, in a way, because there's one, I have a Panamanian, a black Panamanian immigrant who grew up in the South. And she said when she was in the South, you were black before anything else. So that's how she grew up.
Yeah, I remember her.
Exactly. And then when she came to New York, then everybody flies their flag of being Trini, of being this and that. And so where you're born also makes a difference. But the point is noted, and I think there is research to support that after the second, third generation, people feel more African-American. And I think it makes common sense, and it's also human nature. Just as if you think of any corporation that is started by an entrepreneur, by the second, third generation, they wouldn't have the same motivation to run the company as their grandfather did or grandmother
did. That's a great point.
We actually have one more question, Milka.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, we have one. Hold on one sec. Caller, 8631, what's your question?
You know what? It's not really a question, but I have been listening to all that has been talked about today, and I'm just sitting here mad, you know, I'm just mad that nobody has really shed any light on this. I'm like, why hasn't anybody really spoke out about this? Because this seems like something that really needs to be in the mainstream media, but yet nobody, you know, we're hearing about stuff that we really don't need to hear about, when what y'all are talking about today is really what we as American citizens need to hear. And I just want to tell the host that I really do appreciate the work that you're doing, because I know that it's not easy to, you know, go into something that a lot of people, you know, don't find interesting. But, I mean, I know that it has to be a reason why God had it that you were the one that would talk about or bring up this subject.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I really just want to applaud New Radio for having, you know, for giving this guy an opportunity to tell his story and to share what he is doing out there. And I really hope that everyone listening, you know, goes away with something that they were also, you know, like, you know, they will start their own trend, or they will, they will give a voice to this. Because a lot of people really, really need to hear about this. So
what you have to do is you have to go out and spread the word about Nude Radio. You have to let your friends know, and your friends.
You have to let
your friends' friends know, you know, we're on Sunday.
I was actually going to kick it back to Chloe. I wanted to say, I know that Tiffany wants to definitely have a question with you, Chloe, before we end this interview, but just to add on the caller's comment, thank you so much. That was really a great comment. And precisely, you know, when you said that you showed it to a youth group, and I was really excited. I was wondering if you could share with us, along with all the showings that you're going to be doing at various universities, for the people that are listening and are interested in this topic and seeing your documentary, where is it available for them?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to add to the caller's applause, caller 8631's applause for Nude Radio for for giving me the opportunity to share this, and for obviously you also care about the issue and trying to foster conversation about it. So thank you very much. And anybody who's for the spring, I did more screenings in the universities, and I'll be doing that again in the fall. And in the summertime, my goal is to do mostly screenings in churches and other community-based organizations and public institutions. I may be doing a screening at the Smithsonian in D.C. I'm not sure yet. But the next screening will actually be a joint screening by Princeton and the city of Trenton. I did a screening at Princeton last semester, and I want me to come back and do a joint with the city of Trenton. And anybody who's interested in having it for their community-based organization or church, etc., you can just go to neoafricanamericans.com, and there's a link there where they can send me an email, and that's neoafricanamericans.com. So if they go there, they can just see all the information for hosting it. They can just email me, and I'll give them information about hosting a screening based on my schedule. And I also try to put my whole schedule on the web so that even before you reach out to me, you know when it's a good time.
And you also have to Google him. He has the most amazing Google. I was cracking up. I'm just going to say that. Google Kubina, please, and you will enjoy it. What was your question, Tiffany?
Okay, my question, Kobe. I know that you have an individual in the documentary, this young lady who says, I'm American, I'm Haitian American, but I'm more American than Haitian. And if you ask Haitians, they would say that I'm American. If you ask Americans, they would say maybe I'm Jamaican or Haitian. So
yeah.
I have this sort of plight.
Sorry, and she says if you ask Jamaicans, they think she's anything but Jamaican.
Is that right? Yes, exactly. Which I thought was cute. You know, because they sort of lump us all together.
Yeah.
But it's funny. I have had my experience, and I wanted to know, since you say it's a living documentary, how you can, if you can explore this, because my identity, I've struggled with it a little bit, because when Milka asked me to identify myself, I think I'm a West Indian American. I think I'm more West Indian than American, and because the household that I grew up in, that's the food I ate, that's where I went on vacation, that's the community that I live in. I don't know really anything outside of this community, because they were my uncles, my aunts, you know, that's who I spent my time with. And I feel that oftentimes when I meet, let's say, a native Jamaican, if I'm in a corporate setting, and we'll be talking, and they're like, well, you're not really Jamaican. You don't know anything about that. And I'm like, well, that's the food I ate my whole life. Or that's... I mean, that's really the only kind of, I speak Pasa at home. I mean, you know, I probably can speak Pasa better than you. Like, I don't know how else to identify myself. So I feel I'm more West Indian than American, and I don't know if that's something that you've come across, if you've met people that were like me, and like the woman in the documentary said, you know, who are we? Because you're not going to accept us, and then they're not going to accept us.
Please finish.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm in distress. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I think one of the most important insights I've learned from these screenings and discussions is that identity is very fluid. When Milka asked me, I said I'm Ghanaian, but there are times when I'm African, and there are times when I drill deeper. I'm Fante. That's my ethnic group in Ghana.
It
all depends on the context. So I'm sure there are situations where you're African-American. And so identity is fluid, and it's something that we can't – it's not helpful to put people in boxes. So I think where you are or what time it is sort of determines who we are at any time, because we have many things other than one. And we can be one thing here and another thing here. And this country sometimes puts people in certain boxes that makes it hard for people to be fluid and dynamic. But I think that's actually better for us. And I also wanted to make a real quick point about going back to caller 8631. He mentioned why the issue hasn't come to light, even though it's been around for a while. And it's interesting. The way I start the documentary is the point I make is that because the average person see me will not see the difference between me and any other black person. And that is why the immigrant narrative has been lost in the traditional African-American narrative. And there is some academic momentum in studying this subject more. Of course, it's hard as hell to get data on this, given how hard it is. I mean, to give you an example, part of the reason why I didn't have more of an Afro-Latino perspective is because there are many Afro-Latinos who don't consider themselves black, even though for some of us, they would appear black. So I couldn't go to somebody and sort of impose black upon them. Oh, you're black. And they say, I'm not. I can't do anything about it. You know?
Oh, that is really good. I'll
step really back. Good. Yeah, and so that's the reality. But a lot of academic work is being done, and they're trying really hard. I will refer you to, on the website, I try to have, and I have to update it, different academic work that has been done in this area. There's a book that came out, The Other African Americans. Very good, comprehensive book. Regina Jackson at
and
Emory University.
And you interviewed the author as well, didn't
yes,
you?
I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
And Regina Jackson, who is Haitian American, also she's done a very interesting work about marriages between Caribbean Haitian immigrants and African Americans and other Americans. Here's Regina Jackson at Emory University. Doug Massey at Princeton has done some work on the academic side of it, and there's some interesting work that's been done, and I'll try to put as many of them as possible on the website as well as on the Facebook group, which is New African Americans.
Yeah. Well, this is our time. Our time is up, Kobe. I'm so sad we have to let you go. You were absolutely gracious in answering all of our questions. Thank you so much for joining us this beautiful Sunday afternoon. And thank you for making yourself available. Any last words you want to share?
Well, the last word I want to share is that I think, first of all, I'd like to thank you guys for giving me this opportunity. It's been great, and I'm sorry I couldn't do it the other time we tried to schedule. I've learned a couple of things through this, and one of the most important lessons I've learned is that the differences, and somebody said it very well at the University of Chicago, that we should celebrate but not separate. And as much as there are differences, which we should acknowledge and realize that it makes the black community richer, we should also realize that in terms of our lowest moments and our highest moments, we celebrated together, whether it was Abner Louima's brutality by the police, Amadou Diallo on the low end, or on the high end with Obama's inauguration. I think we all celebrate all of these. All of these together. And one final point, on the website, I have an informal poll for people to click what they are. I have African-American, Latin African-American, et cetera. And the one that has the highest number is just a person. And I found that very interesting.
That's really clever.
Thank you so much, Kobe.
Thank you very much.
And for all of you, I hope that this was as enjoyable for you as it was for me, and keep in touch with Kobe, please, as we all will here in Nude Magazine. We'll be right back, and our lines will still be open, and you can call us at 646-727-1706. We'll be right back with some feedback and common sense. I have a good one for y'all. Let me know if you
Yeah. You're listening to Bye Bailando by Misionero y Adriel. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
Before we jump back into the show, Karis got a whole lot shaken as far as announcements go. Karis, what are our announcements for this week?
Well, for this week, we have the Education for Life South African Cheese and Wine Tasting Event. It's a fundraising benefit benefiting the I don't know what it's benefiting. I'm so sorry.
It's benefiting the children of the primary school in Slavisa, South Africa.
Okay. That's it. That's exactly what it's benefiting. I was testing to see if you knew what it was benefiting, Tiffany, and you passed the test. Good job. Okay. It is on Tuesday, April 21st at 6 p.m. It's $10 to get in. It's a required donation to enter. To ensure there's enough for everyone, kindly RSVP to jaughna@nyu.edu. Okay? I'm hearing that there's, some nice raffle prizes, two-night stay at the Ritz-Carlton in Las Vegas, a 45-minute massage in Manhattan. Those are some of the things. Anyway, moving on. April 25th, Miami Going Green Festival at Bayfront Park. Man, it's been a long time since I've been down at Bayside. It starts at 12 in the afternoon to 8. Is that right, Tiffany?
Yes,
from
noon
to 8.
The whole festival.
Wow, all night. Okay, so that is on April 25th. If you want more information on that, it's miamigoinggreen.com. Again, miamigoinggreen.com. And again, we have the Music Rocks Your Soul Mix Show on air, www.gospelsynergy.com. It's on this Monday at 2 p.m. featuring Mr. E and Craig D of Soul Movement Crew.
All right, sweet. Thanks so much, KB. Now we're going to go into our overheard for the week. I know you have a great one. We want to let our listeners know if you've overheard something on your streets at the doctor's office, waiting in line at the coffee shop, let us know about it. Post your stories to our forum at nudemagazine.com. But KB, what's your overheard? I know it's awesome. Please tell them.
Yeah, I'm actually very, very scared to say this overheard. I'm not as brave as Tiffany is every
Come
week.
Come on, Manny. Come on, Manny.
Okay. All right. So I'm in the Sony Plaza down, in Manhattan this week. Well, this past week, and I go into Starbucks and I'm sitting down and I'm on my phone and I'm playing some different applications and things like that. And there's what I thought was a student, I think he was an African American student. I'm calling him African-American. I don't know if he calls himself African-American. he's there, reading this very thick book, and he's writing down notes, so I guess he's doing schoolwork of some kind. And then he gets a call on his cell phone, and he stops his work for a little while, and I hear him saying, hey, man, yeah, what's up? Oh, yeah, God is good all the time, God is good. Yeah, man, F those gay people, man. I'm tired of those gay dudes hollering at me, man. They need to stop coming up on me, man. What's wrong with New York? New York is becoming the new Sodom and Gomorrah. New York is now called the new San Fran, man. F those gay people, man. I need to be more strong with them. I was so shocked.
Oh my gosh. Oh my
I was
gosh.
Like, wow, this can only happen in New York. My goodness.
God is good.
Yeah, he starts off his conversation like, God is good all the time. God is good. Yeah, and so gay people. I'm like, what is this?
I can't do that.
That's up, bro. Yeah.
I cannot deal with this. Seriously, New York. That's why all these overheard conversations have happened in New York. Like, we haven't heard Milka's overheard conversations like that crazy. Like, seriously, hers are a bit more sedate. They're not as out there as ours are.
Yeah, in New York. So I just had to apologize before I gave that overheard.
Oh, my gosh.
That's okay.
Please. Send us your overheard conversations for next week. We'd love to read them on the air. You can call in live, and you can say it with your accent and your intonation. We'd love to hear from you. All right, now we're going to move into common sense Queen of Common Sense has a great letter today, and we're going to ask KP, the manliest man, to read it for us because he's a man.
All right, fine. Okay. All right, here we go. Dear Milka, a.k.a. Miss Uncensored, which I guess is what they're calling her these days. Let me continue. I have a relative. I have a relative in the armed forces, and he recently confessed to us that his girlfriend is pregnant. Now, the family is really taking this hard. There are some conversations of him being trapped, and of the validity, that the baby is even his. I hate to admit, but I kind of agree with the fam. Should I be the supportive relative and let him know that regardless he can count on me to be there for him as his new family, or should I share my concerns of foul play? Sincerely, Confused Male, Miami.
First thing I want to say is,
go get tested.
You know, yes, sir.
Go get that baby tested.
You are welcome to disprove
the
enemies.
Go on Maury Povich. Make sure you get that baby tested. That's what I say. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a sure way to lose your relative. I think that it could be a great point of insult if you bring that up, if he doesn't. If he is sharing his doubts with you that the baby may not be his, then I would tag along with Karis and say, encourage him to have, you know, the baby tested. But if he does not question the validity of the pregnancy, if he has full faith in his woman, you have to play the silent type and stand by your relative and just see as it goes. Because honestly, the best thing you could do is be there. If it's not and things fall apart, be there, be his support system. But until he says something, until he expresses any doubt, I think if you do, you might be insulting, you know, his future wife or, you know, so that's where I stand with that. If he doesn't doubt it, just keep your doubts to yourself. Don't insult him, because it's basically saying that his woman cheated.
I'm being a little hypocrite because a friend of mine was in the same situation and I didn't say anything. So, yeah.
Exactly, because
you can
really insult somebody
like
that.
Yeah, true.
For sure. You know, that's what I'm saying. You are more than welcome to think it, but you know, you might get cussed out because that's insulting his lady.
I thought it, and I still think it. So.
Yeah.
Oh, I just got myself in so much trouble.
Seriously.
What did you think, Tiff? Do you think he should say something?
I think that he should. He should say something. I think that you need to be honest with your friend, as we talked about honesty with your friend from the last letter you got, Milka. It's always good. To be honest.
But it is the family who's questioning it. He's not the one questioning it.
Are you sure he has no suspicions? Are you sure he has
no suspicions? No, but he's saying, but this is the thing, he's saying the family is questioning the validity of this. But
like,
he doesn't feel trapped.
Okay.
You know what
I'm
saying?
I feel that if it's his suspicion, yeah.
Exactly.
But if it's not, you know how these crazy people are. I mean, it sounds like they're with
exactly.
Indian. I'm sorry. It sounds like they're crazy.
They totally sound Caribbean because they would be the one to get all in your business like that.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, yeah. She's crazy.
All in the Kool-Aid.
All in the Anyway, guys, we are done for the day. Thank you so much for listening to Nude Radio. Next week is Dr. Charlton McElwain. We'll be talking pop culture politics post-Obama election. It's going to be great. We would love for you to be with us next week. All right. Till then, I'm Tiffany Knowles.
I am KP.
And I'm Milka Dennis. Bye-bye. See you next Sunday.
Later.
What's your problem? What's on your mind? You're there. Right.
It's raw. It's uninhibited. And yes, it's nude. Nude Radio, the live talk show for the urban 20-something. Join us every Sunday at 3 p.m. where we're talking arts, film, trends, politics, music, and spirituality. BlogTalkRadio.com/NEWD. Talk radio has never been this naked.